The information presented in this podcast is not intended for the treatment or prevention of disease or any medical condition, nor is a substitute for medical advice. The information contained herein in this podcast reflects only the opinion of the author and presenter and is in no way considered required practice.
Welcome to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connects your brain to your brawn.
Hi, this is Eric Fiorello, and I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. Today's November 5th, 2014. We're sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York, where we're not the biggest, but we're the best. And our motto is, we don't try, we succeed. And a new thing we got, we are the stewards of strength here. We are the gatekeepers. And on Wednesday night, every other week, we have Bud Jeffries joining us, which we couldn't be happier with. And tonight, we're going to talk about a really, really great subject. We're going to build some big, huge traps, big back, and we're going to try to keep, the back pretty much bulletproof healthy. So, Bud, I want to welcome you to Motivation and Muscle. And before you say hello, after that, give everybody a little information what's going on with you guys and what's coming up, and we'll chat again with that near the end of the show.
All right. Hi, everybody. So if you don't know me, I'm a professional old-time style performing strongman, and I've written about 8 books in regard to strength and fitness and everything crazy you could possibly do to lift heavy and be huge and be awesome and do all the things that there are to do that and fight tigers with your bare hands and all kind of stuff like that. But what's coming up right now, and part of why I talked about this subject today, is our brand new book, which actually we had a little delay on. We had a little, I hate dealing with fulfillment and public companies and crap like that, but it is what it is. It's part of the game. Had a little delay there with people like that, but it'll be out in a day or so, and it's maximum functional mass. And so it's exactly what we're going to talk about. It's how to build the biggest, most useful, most bulletproof muscles you can possibly build, and one of the big areas there is the back, so we're working on that.
Absolutely. I know what you mean about delays. It's tough when people got, I hate to say control, but they do have control.
I've been in this business a long time, and it's one of those things where you roll with the changes and stuff, and I've been, and we had a company, this is one of the first times, they flat out lied to us about everything, everything involved in the process. Whoever their sales guy was completely lied about every step of the way.
Yep.
And we had to drop them, change the whole deal, and that, it puts a delay on getting, when you do all this stuff for yourself, getting things printed and all that stuff, it's a big deal.
It is. It's a very big deal. And the thing is, when people are counting on you, they don't realize, maybe they don't care. I mean, that's hurting you. That's hurting your name. And then it doesn't matter what's going on behind the scenes. You're the guy that's going to have to take the hit. And that's not a good thing. That can really hurt you big time. So hopefully everything will be set and you'll be ready to roll. And I'm sure the book.
It's no big deal. We got it done. It just put a little couple days behind.
We got it done. Well, you're a veteran now of all this stuff, so you know the deal.
Yeah.
So you know what to do, and obviously it's like with anything we do in life, experience is the best teacher, period. Let's start, obviously, we know traps, rhomboids, lats, all that. Let's get into where you want to start. You want to start right in with the trap area, or do you want to start in with something else?
It's all good with me. It doesn't make a difference. I think you... when you discuss building a back, especially building one that's bulletproof and big and strong from every angle, you're going to have to do some exercises that target certain areas. So much of what you do with the back targets everything as you go.
Yeah.
And actually, I was just one of the key points I made in my book is I'm really heavy. I'm really, really, really hugely big on rowing motions of different kinds. I have my favorites. And I like them all. But one of the things I said about that, And one of the other exercises I'm going to talk about is the rowing motion stresses the entire upper back. It's going to stress the rhomboids, the lats, the traps, everything involved there. But it's also going to stress the lower back and abdominal complex because you cannot pull with the arms and upper back the motions necessary to build the upper back muscles without a strong enough platform of low back and abdominals to hold the mm-hmm. body in position to pull. Mm-hmm. You can't do that. One has to work with the other. And in the real world, well, that's how things work. You don't, with the exception of this, and I do think this is necessary for a big back, more than likely it's necessary for the functionality of your back, is the chin up and motions like that. But with that exception right there, everything you do in the real world where you pull with the arms, and that's one of the big motions. When you lift a stone or when you pull mm-hmm. somebody in a wrestling move or whatever, what are you doing? You're essentially performing a row or a combination mm-hmm. of a row and deadlift, and the lower back is the basis for everything. The hips, the abdominals have to be strong enough to be a platform for the upper back to fire, for the arms and the upper mm-hmm. back to work. So, mm-hmm. you know, I really don't think you can separate it. It all has to work together. But that being said, you want to hammer on the traps? You know, I got a few of my favorite exercises there, and I got actually one or two that I've been experimenting with that I was actually kind of shocked at the trap development that it gave me, and you wouldn't think of it as a back exercise, but mm-hmm. Your involvement is so ridiculously whole body that the trap involvement is just insane. Like, I'll give you, for instance, on that. For true trap development, okay, mm-hmm. you have to have, I believe, some type of a deadlift.
Okay. Yep.
Now, two of my favorite deadlifts are dumbbell deadlifts and farmer's walk-style deadlifts, and I believe mm-hmm. those two, especially because they allow the weight to come to your sides at the top,
yes.
are very, very trap-intensive. Mm-hmm. So that being said, those are two of my favorites, but I think for real trap development, you got to have some kind of a row. Okay.
Yep.
I like the one-arm row because I do think with the body angle that you create, you emphasize the lat really hard, but you also emphasize the trap. They work mm-hmm. together. Okay. And I like a shrug, a shrugging motion. And a lot of people are going to disagree with this. I like an upright rowing motion as well.
That's fine.
I like those. I do them, you know, both strict as well as in kind of a heave style. So
yep.
when I get to the heaviest end, it's sort of a combination of a row as well as a high pull.
Yep.
And I like those particularly. I think they're amazing for trap development. And we'll get into those in a second. Let me tell you the one that I really got a bunch of trap development out of that you wouldn't think.
Okay.
Is one arm pressing.
That would make sense.
And
definitely.
Yeah. Because you would think, you know, it's all dumbbell, it's all deltoid, right?
Yep.
But
yep.
I think this, with a one arm thing, especially when you get to super heavy stuff, okay, and you're doing mm-hmm. one arm push presses or that kind of thing, your body is actually going to be cocked to the side, and you're going to get enough weight on the body as yep. a counterbalance. You're going to get enough weight on the body that when you heave off the bottom to press up as strongly as possible, or even when you press yep. with a strict motion, essentially, your trap is firing as hard mm-hmm. as it can right along with the rest of the body to get that motion started, and then also yep. to stabilize it overhead. And I actually posted a picture earlier this week where I just happened to – man, I did some super heavy one-arm presses
yep.
and woke up the next day and my traps were like, you know, scratching my ears. And I was like, wow, dude. you know?
Yeah, well, you had that good shot of you with no shirt on the other day doing like a most muscular pose, yeah. man. Well, let me tell you something I've been doing that I've got some pretty good trap action off of. I've been doing we've talked about this before. I'm a big believer in high shrugs.
Right.
For two reasons. I love supports, anything you're holding. Now, I'm not talking I'm high shrugging 700 pounds either, all right?
Right.
But I don't mind putting like 450 on me and shrugging. But what I've been doing is I've been going back and forth between that and a Nautilus neck machine. Four-way, the first version of it, not the sissy shit, all right? In 6 weeks, I've put over about an inch and a quarter on my traps.
Wow.
It works. It's a combination of, like, blowing the – I've got a little over a 21-inch neck. I want to get a 23-inch neck by early next year.
Nice. Wow, that's
– and maybe I can do it quicker because we know the neck grows fairly quick.
Right.
I don't necessarily want to put any more body weight on,
right.
but that's kind of like the goal. And what I've been doing with that sometimes, bud, is I combo that with the thigh deadlift, with the hand-thigh deadlift with the 55-gallon drums.
Right.
So I'm doing singles with that. You know, I might do like a set of three with that and a set of three with a four-way neck and decide how far I'm going to go before I tire. Because initially when I started those, it seemed like it was wiping my shoulder girdle out pretty quick. because I'd be trying to use a lot heavier weight than I should have in the high shrug and then go right to the neck and then go right back to the deadlift like that. Right. But now I've got it mastered and it works out fine. So I just wanted to lend that. I think the high shrug is
I think those
a very valuable move.
Are amazing. I think those I think that one of the great ways to grow traps is to mix in those couple of, like, the thin ones you're talking about there, right? That high shrug.
Yep.
And then that quarter deadlift or that hand and thigh type.
Yep.
Deadlift, that is a massive. Yep. Stimulator to traps.
Yep. Well, you know why I got into that too is this is my feeling, and I'd like you to comment on this. I think when you're messing around with big stones, especially like, you know, Iceland,
right.
I don't care if they're natural stones out of a river, you can find monsters anywhere.
Right.
One of the reasons why I got into this barrel stuff, I just kind of started thinking about it, and I believe from messing around with stones so much now I got a little bit of experience. I think that stimulates that middle to upper back like that, and especially with a high shrug.
Mm.
I found that my stones are coming off the ground not only quicker, but a hell of a lot stronger now.
Huh. Well, that's interesting that you would find that. That makes sense. I mean, that makes sense. Plus the massive overload, okay?
Like, exactly.
People don't talk about that, and I do think for stone lifting and for back, you need
– yep.
Like, if you look at the stuff I just talked about, okay, what did I talk about? As far as my deadlift styles, I like a dumbbell deadlift, which is real extreme full range.
Yep.
And then also a shorter range, like a farmer's walk deadlift, or I do a lot of rack pulls and the same kind of thing you're doing with
Sure.
I do think that is important too, especially for stones or for that kind of thing, because you're going to lift things that are, you know, with your fingers on the floor, as well as things with your hands, you know, where you're started with an almost stood up body position. Both those things are important. I do think that that super overload, like if you're rack pulling 800 or 1,000 pounds,
sure, yep.
You know, a 300-pound stone doesn't feel that heavy.
Exactly. And you know what else I like you do too, and you may, I know you know this, but for anybody that's not sure and had some bicep issues like myself,
mm-hmm.
I like the idea that you're using, I assume you're using this, I know with a farmer's walk you are, you're using a supinated position with your hands, which for anybody that doesn't know, having your hands that way can save you the life of your bicep. Take it from a guy that's torn one.
Right.
I've got two different style logs, Bud, and I wrote a story recently. I love using, obviously, 2-inch, 3-inch thick bars. I do arm work, direct arm work, which I haven't done in years, every 12 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it's strictly with 2-inch, 3-inch. The triceps are strictly done with, I have 4x4 dip bars lagged into the wall. So right there, the amount of grip to hold yourself, I put myself straight up in the air and come straight down, obviously, on the bars, strictly for tricep.
Right.
Keep the elbows right in at the side. Bingo, okay? After that, I go out in the driveway. I take a 2-inch dumbbell handle, load it as heavy as I can, straddle it, power clean it, bring it up over to the top of the head, bring it behind the head, rest it on the traps, and explode a tricep extension like that. I love doing that. It's a big, heavy, meaty lift, especially when you see the bar on the ground. It looks basically like a mini truck axle. So this is what, and this is the same thing where I was going to get to, is I've got two different logs, obviously. I've got the one that looks like a regular bar, but the handles are supinated in it. You know, it's in like a square box, the handles. And I like doing that because, you know, everything's fixed and everything, but I'm always very cognizant of things like that, biceps, especially when you're pulling real heavy, you're pulling stones real heavy. And I don't know if you're doing that intentionally or not, but obviously, you know, we know you like dumbbells and things of that nature. But I just wanted to mention that because for anybody out there that's had some injuries or had to have surgery on their bicep, that supination could, you know, maybe save you for a lot of years.
Well, and it's funny you mentioned that. I actually talked directly about that and said something in the book that's coming up that
okay.
said it, people are going to feel this is a little bit heretical when you come from the hardcore world, okay? Because they'll tell
yep.
you never use lifting straps, all right?
Right.
I disagree with that in the appropriate situations,
yep.
and I'll tell you why. I haven't torn one, but I've seen buddies of mine rip biceps pulling heavy deadlifts and pulling that kind of thing, and it's always, almost always, in the supinated hand, and mm-hmm. in the hand that's turned under, doing a full powerlifting split grip deadlift.
Yep.
And I think if you're going to powerlift, okay, meaning you're going to competitively lift there, you got to practice that grip. And I still practice that grip to a certain level. But post to that, especially with the super heavy rack pull type stuff or whatever, and especially with a rotating bar. Now, I don't know if your bar with your drums rotates or at all. You know, that,
no.
That's different.
Go ahead. I'm
If it doesn't rotate, then you've got a lot more grip advantage. That's a different thing. But, okay, I feel like here's the thing. Most people, when they get a fully twisted hand and it gets to the edge of their grip and they're really gutting a lift out, what happens a lot is, number one, they're just not necessarily conditioned to keep their arms 100% straight. But number two, when it's on the edge of your grip and you're squeezing the forearm as hard as you can possibly do, sometimes you accidentally, and you really almost can't stop it, you overactivate the bicep. You don't intend to pull with the bicep, but the bicep itself, which should technically be relaxed in a deadlift, contracts so hard, you end up attempting to literally deadlift as well as almost do like a split grip curl, something ridiculous at the same time. I think that's where a lot of bad bicep stuff starts to happen. You just end up going to a place that's bad. And, you know, a lot of people, especially also with a split grip and a regular deadlift or stuff, have trouble with the upper back. You know, where they turn one hand and the other. And really, it's not that big a deal for a lot of people, but there are a few people that they just, that little bit of unbalance pulls them off enough that they get upper back problems. I say pull knuckles front as long as you can. Pull a few sets to keep your grip good, but you got to remember, we're all doing grip work, so I don't think you're going to lose that grip if you need it. But I think in general training, you're smarter to do the super heavy work there with straps at the time, simply because the safety issue involved is smart. You know, I'm not exactly Mr. You know, I don't call for, you know, I don't look for a judge's ruling when I want to do something, whether it might be safe.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, being smart about using a long-term intelligence in your career is probably a good thing. And if you're, most of us are doing plenty of grip work anyway. It's a good grip thing to do, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, that's an area where the safety factor outweighs the, you know,
ego, maybe.
Well, through it, and you're all sissies if you don't use straps.
Here's the deal. When I hurt that arm, all right, now I'll tell you, because now you said it, I use Strass and straight buffalo bar, whatever, the cube bar, you know, the S-cuber. All right, so when that thing goes through those big tubes in those barrels, I can put one plate of any size on the end and then collared. I can't put any more. The rest of the weight is thrown in the barrels. Obviously, we don't have a loading pin there, so we do know that it's very uneven, very unorthodox, and I'm a guy that likes to put in sometimes more on one side, so then they'll try to walk you when you pull them.
Right.
But what I did was I am not doing any more reverse stuff, okay? I injured the left arm. I don't want to take a chance. I'm a righty. I've got no problem. I did it for years. Overhand, like you said, I'll pull until my grip breaks. I pull the straps out, put them on, pull the shit out of the barrels. I really don't care what, you know, the public opinion is on it, because you hit the hammer right on the anvil there. Do you want to have some longevity in your career? And if you're training, now this is training, which matters. Why not save your biceps with a set of straps? Is it really going to hurt you that bad? Is, you know, are people going to make fun of you for that? I mean, come on, will you? So I agree wholeheartedly with you on that. I think that's a great, great fact.
The strap thing really came in because you know, I've both seen this too. You go to a normal gym and you see a guy with 15-pound dumbbells and it's
he's got straps. Okay. Yep.
Not what we're talking about here. We're talking about you got 800 pounds on the bar and it gets to a point where the total amount of stress in the arms is a bad idea. So put them on. It's the whole point of doing the right tool for the right job.
Yeah.
You know, and at the right time, and being smart about. And that's another thing I think is a big deal, as far as intelligence and the amount of stress you put on your back.
Yeah.
You know, because the back is something you need for a lifetime, and you know, and again, I think that's a problem sometimes in the hardcore world. For instance, we like to, God, we're a bunch of sanctimonious idiots sometimes in the how that we, you know, in how that, and I suppose I've been through parts of that in my life of, you know, if you don't deadlift this way, you're wrong. Or if you don't deadlift this way, that way, you're wrong. If you don't squat that this way, that way, you're wrong. Well, you know what? As I've grown up, I've gotten past a lot of that and realized that sometimes the smartest thing you can do is consolidate the stress that you place on any particular given part. The straps being one idea of saving a bad stress off of a part while putting a good stress on another.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that's something that you need to consider, especially, all right, well, we've been talking about the traps in the upper back. So let's talk about totality of stress that you're putting on there. Because you got to remember, all right, every time you do any kind of press, every time you do any kind of pull, you're still putting stress in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think a lot of times people go way overboard. And that's when you end up with stuff like pulled traps and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you get tears and those things where, you know, you're doing 800 different exercises and doing them all hard. I think it's intelligent to hit it very hard with one or two things.
Yep.
And then
get out.
Give it some rest in between or, get, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of there's a lot to be said, in my opinion, for how you program your exercises and what kind of total stress they put on the system as well as the muscle structure that you're using.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always had a lot of issues. I won't say a lot, but whenever I go and get active release, rhomboids have always been a problem with me.
Right.
It's like they're just whacked. It feels like somebody whacked them with a sledgehammer, you know, at times.
Mm-hmm.
And a rhomboid at times can really be a pain in the ass. Like I'll feel it all in the shoulder blade and all that.
Right.
And at times it can be uncomfortable. So yeah, I mean, you gotta, you know, look at the big word is R for recovery.
Right.
That's what we're all in it for.
Right.
You know, don't go over the cliff. It's all right if you get 1 foot over it, but pull your ass back so you can keep going.
Right. Absolutely. Well, and there's the whole balance of the whole thing is, you have to progressively overstep your bounds to get better. At the same time, trying to do it all in one day is how you end up, you know, crippled.
Yeah.
In other words, I'm gonna go from I got, you know, starter traps to I got Bill Goldberg gorilla traps in one day. Well, that doesn't work that way, and it's not going to get there any faster because you did 7,000 different types of shrug. Pick one and get good at it.
Yeah, it's like my buddies. They all like doing neck, okay, bud? So, you know, you'll get a few of them. You know, they'll do 3 or 4 different things for a neck, all right? And then they'll call me up and say, who's that guy you go to down in near New York City? I'm like, who? And they're like, the guy that you get ART from. I said, I give him the name of the guy, right? And I said, why? I can't turn my neck to the side.
Well, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like stupid, you know, it's like, what the hell's the matter with you? You know, but, you know, I just think with lifting, this is how I interpret it a lot of times. We all have a lot of zeal for it.
Yeah.
We love doing it. And it's like, you know, like when you're a kid too, you know, your mother will say to you, don't do that. Don't put your hand near that hot stove.
Yeah.
And what will you do 9 times out of 10?
Right.
You'll do it and you'll get a freaking burn and you'll be screaming like a baby.
Right.
Same thing with lifting.
Right.
You know, we know now. But I'm guilty of it too at times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it feels so damn good. And you're, you know, like when you're on that night, it's like anything you touch is moving any which way you want to do it. You overdo it and then you pay for it. But
there's
I don't know.
Nothing
I guess
wrong. There's nothing wrong with riding it when you're on a big thing.
Right. Right.
But at the same time, consistently overdoing it. And I don't necessarily mean you couldn't do some pretty significant volume for the upper back. I mean, I tend to float around, you know, this is kind of how I approach the whole back thing. I always do one heavy hammer, okay, upper back and one heavy hammer lower back exercise.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all mixed and it's all cycled over a period of time, okay?
Mm-hmm.
For instance, like for me, the big upper back exercise that I do, especially when you look at the total of upper back lats included, is arm rows.
Okay.
I love those. I can do them super heavy. I can do them super heavy without a tremendous amount of low back stress. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I can do them quickly. I can do high reps or low reps, doesn't matter. They fit well within what I want to do. And I actually, when you do them heavy and hard enough, I actually feel, and this is something I think people miss with working the upper back. The upper back has a huge amount of muscle mass.
Hell yeah.
Huge, huge when you do it right. And when you get really strong with rowing type motions, you can actually, I believe, people always talk about you need squats and deadlifts to create a testosterone
a big back.
Effect or
yep.
whatever throughout the body.
Yep.
I think you can do it with rows too.
Yeah,
I think I can definitely feel it when you get out there and drop, I mean, really hit the hammer on some brutally heavy, you know, rows. I always have that same feeling the next day, like mm-hmm. I did squats or deadlifts, that like, holy crap, I'm hungry, and, you know, mm-hmm. I probably shouldn't say this because people will give me crap, but you're horny as a 15-year-old boy.
There's nothing wrong with that, man.
You know.
Hey, you know something, though, too, I'll tell you, is I love any type of rowing, mm-hmm. lat-wise, and don't look down on me because I've got four machines, and the only reason why I got them is because they're first-generation Nautilus, and I think there is a lot of validity to them if you know how to use them properly. I'll tell you one thing that blows your damn lats up like nothing I've ever done. I've always been a big pullover guy. Mm-hmm. I was able to acquire a used first-generation pullover machine.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you something. It's kind of hard to fit into it with my shoulders, but you can get into it. I'll squeeze into anything that will work. You come off that thing and you do that properly,
mm-hmm.
You look like you could fly down the street because you got wings, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, it. I've got another piece too. I haven't touched it since I hurt the bicep because of the way it kind of lays on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got a Nautilus trap machine. I guess I had read a lot of old articles in Perry Raider's magazine way back when, like in the 60s. And they had Dick Butkus in it, who is one of my biggest heroes in football. I just love that dude.
Right.
And there he was demonstrating the Nautilus trap machine. So I was like, I got to see if I can find one of these. And they're rare as hell, and I found one. I'll tell you one thing. I'm going to go back and try it one more time. I mean, I'd hate to have to sell it because I know I could because they're very rare.
Mm-hmm.
But that thing would put a set of – I mean, you look like you had coconuts below your ears. That thing was unreal, man.
Right.
So – you know,
there's nothing, you know, people, again, come from that hardcore world and the whole thing. And we, you know, we all went through that phase or whatever where all machines are crap. And I still agree that a lot of them are.
Okay. Yeah, I agree, too.
But there are some that are perfectly usable, except there's one I particularly like to use for back, which is a chest supported row.
Okay.
I particularly like that thing. I've got one it's similar to a T-bar row, but it's literally a thing where you lay into.
Yep.
There's a pad for your chest, essentially, or almost like a reverse bench, really, for your chest
sure.
that you lay across. And essentially it allows you – and there's what I'm talking about, consolidation of stress, okay? So
yep.
if I'm going to do a two-arm rowing motion, you know, I used to – and I still like them occasionally, still cycle them in. I used to do a ton of very heavy barbell rows.
Yeah.
A ton of them. Yep. I started doing – before they had a name, everybody calls them Pendlay rows now. Which is essentially it's a bent over barbell row. You start off the floor.
Yeah.
Okay. That's how I learned to do them. And the first I didn't know that was 20 years ago before I had it. Not that Glenn Pendlay isn't an awesome dude, but I don't know. You know, I didn't know what I didn't. He didn't invent it. You know?
Right. Exactly. Right.
And he popularized it because people didn't know what they were, and Glenn likes to use them for a particular thing for Olympic lifting, which again, brilliant. But I just like that's a style I grew up with, and then later on I experimented with a more conventional style where you take it out, bend over, and do that. But you know what? I found that the combination of if I'm doing heavy squats
yep.
or heavy deadlifts and trying to do a lot of a barbell bent over rowing, that's a ton of
lower back
stress.
Yep, absolutely.
And I think one of the smartest things you can do, again, is consolidate that stress. Plus the thing with that is the chest supported row thing basically makes you do it almost completely strict.
Right. Because we used to do that with a flat bench. We'd put it on 45-pound plates and put the Olympic bar under it
mm-hmm.
and lay right on your belly and pull like that. It's you can't use anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Your arms are pulling it. That's about it.
Yeah, and I believe in both directions for developing the back.
Yep.
And here's what I mean. But I do have a pet peeve about one thing I'm going to tell you about that I think is dumb that people do. Okay.
Okay.
So, like, when I do rows, okay, I like to do this on pretty much everything I do that is appropriate to apply momentum to, okay? Mm-hmm. So when I work up over sets of rows or whatever, I'm going to do them as strict as possible until it's time to use the body momentum, and then I'm going to progressively add momentum and have that pull together. I think it's important for developing the back that way. Here's why. Lee Haney said this when I was a kid, and it stuck with me as far as an intelligent thing to do. He said that in trying to develop the lats, okay, you got to remember that the weakest link is the bicep, because you're always pulling with the arm, pulling with the bicep. That's actually why the pullover is so great, because it actually eliminates the bicep and works the lat more directly. And that's why the old Nautilus thing, they used to do the superset. Pullovers and then pull downs, or pullovers and chin ups, or something like that, which was brilliant because it eliminates it rests the bicep, pre-fatigues the lats. That's a great way to grow them, and then immediately hammers them again when you're using the bicep while it's strong. But okay, if you're rowing, you got to remember that the lats are twice the size of the bicep. They're stronger, but they're limited because the bicep. Okay, so your bicep has to grow as well, has to be strong. Actually, rows are great. Chin-ups as well for growing the bicep too, okay? But, and if you do them nothing but strictly, you'll never use the full pulling power of the lat because your bicep will never let you get past it. But if you use – what Lee Haney said is the right way to do this is this. You use enough body English to get past the part where the bicep is pulling and get into the part where the lat is pulling.
Okay. So you get rid of the – you eliminate the weak link, basically.
And you're using that body English to stress the stronger link as well. And I think when you get that pure heavy load on the one-arm row or any kind of row and get that little bit of English to it, with that total amount of weight, you're literally pulling as hard as you can with the lat and then using the body English to eliminate the bicep. That's why I believe in that doing that. That's why I believe in doing them both, because you get the greatest all-around development by doing them both strict and with a heaving motion, or people call it a cheat motion, whatever you, however you want to call it.
Right. Well, I'll tell you something I do, and I learned this off another old Ironman, and Joe Doobie wrote it, great Olympic lifter, and they couldn't figure out how the Russians, they're looking at all these bloc countries, and you know, they had spinal erectors. They looked like cobras on them. And these guys were all doing the same stuff. Clean and jerk at the time. You could press overhead, all that stuff. Well, one of the things they found that they were doing was they were doing more of a close grip bent row. And they were using, I have like an original glute ham machine. And that was all based off all the stuff that he did when he went over there, when Alexia would be hooking his feet into like the gymnastic bars and draped over a pommel horse with a big bar on his neck, and he'd come up and explode it. Well, I'm here to tell you, you do that combination, go back and forth, you will get some nasty spinal erect. I mean, they'll connect right down almost, you know, your ass cheeks, and the combination of the row. Now, the thing I experienced with the row, which was a little bit different at first, when you got your hands in fairly close, it's not good. You're not, let's put it this way, if you're rowing 350, you're not going to come close,
right?
Because it's a whole different effect when your hands are in that close. It kind of limits, you know, the weight you're going to use until you get used to it. So that's just another thing I do. I will take and do a set of those, go over the glued ham, come back. Your back feels like it's going to explode. It's so loaded with blood. And another thing I use too, I use the Bobby Hands. What was the name of his company there? You know, the cables, bud.
Lifeline.
Lifeline.
Yeah.
I've got that thing. I don't think they make it anymore. I've never seen it. I think we had talked about the stuff before one day with cables. Mm-hmm. It's got like the stirrups in it. And being that I don't have anybody there to spot me with an Olympic bar, I don't want to take a chance. If I had chains hanging from the ceiling, I'd have no problem with it, but I don't. So what I do is I hook that underneath the legs of the glued ham, and I can put the whole cable behind my neck. And basically I can come up in that same formation like that, so I can have quite a bit of drag on me if I want to add some really harsh resistance. So. I mean, that's just a tip. That's just something I do, which I've had very good success with.
Right. Well, actually using a band like that is actually how I add resistance to dumbbell deadlifts. I'll tell you about it in a second. I was going to say this is my pet peeve that I see people doing, there's actually a pretty famous video or a couple of them that go around on the internet of this guy doing shrugs. Okay. And I believe in doing shrugs. I believe in doing upright rows or high pulls too. But there's some stupid stuff people do. Okay. And I don't necessarily have a problem with doing shrugs super heavy. Mm-hmm. And when they're super heavy, you might not have a super huge range of motion. But I do believe in doing them strict and light, where there's no body English, and then doing them like an Olympic lifter would do them, where you use the body and explode together. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Don't get so heavy where you're just you're not actually doing anything but ducking your neck.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you're getting no movement of the bar and you're literally just, you know, doing like the, what was that thing in the 80s, walk like in a gym, if you're just doing...
Yeah, walk like that song,
move, okay, that's a problem. If your neck moves a little bit with the flow of your body, mine tends to do that when I do high pulls, okay? That's one thing. But when you're not getting any movement at all and you're just ducking your neck, thinking, shrugging, that's not working either. I'll tell you something that's a real killer burn for shrugs, too, as well, is pause shrugs. Shrugging up and pausing at the top or doing an isometric hold at the top for like three count or something like that will just rip them.
Nothing looks better, though, than a mean set of traps, man, because you and I both know, like, any opponent, I mean, you've been in the ring, you're going to kind of take heed right away to somebody that's got a big, thick neck and a thick set of traps, because obviously you're going to, if you hit them with everything you got, you better hope you knock them out. You know, I mean, if they look at you and just kind of shake their head, you might have a problem, you know?
Well, and it kind of, it denotes two things. It denotes power.
Yes, exactly.
And the other thing is it generally denotes a really serious trainee who's actually prepared versus like, okay, it's one thing you get in a big guy and he's kind of big everywhere, but he doesn't have much neck.
Right.
Then he probably doesn't, not all that powerful either.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? And it's one of those things where, you know, they're skipping a lot of the really important stuff, or they're skipping the stuff that forces the neck to grow, which is the real heavy upper back exercises. And that combo, neck and back together, is really brutal too.
Absolutely. I like that more than probably anything I've done in years. I just discovered that I was just a shot in the dark, man. I said, you know, I wonder how this would team up with the other two, and did it, and it worked. And, you know from doing all this stuff, it's the stuff that you kind of just walk into blindly that sometimes pays the biggest dividends, you know?
Absolutely.
So we're in the lats. Where do we want to go next? Are we going to hit – we've done some lower back. What else – where do you want to go next, bud?
Well, hold on. Let's finish the lower back a little bit too, because you talked about that. You talked about using a band. So we've decided, personally, I think for traps, you got to have some kind of deadlift. I like the different rack pulls and the dumbbell type pulls or farmer's pulls. And you need shrugs and some kind of a Olympic style pulling movement. Then for low back, those kind of same deadlifts. But let me tell you why. All right. Mm-hmm. I think this is something that we're dogmatic about, is you got to deadlift regular American conventional powerlifting deadlift. But we talk about that as if it's the holy grail of things, and it's not a bad movement, don't get me wrong. Here's what I'm going to say to you about that, though. The regular deadlift like that is a totally arbitrary range of motion movement.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You literally deadlift with a barbell on the floor because the first dude who decided to make barbell plates arbitrarily decided to make them that size.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? It doesn't make a more or less functional move than what you should have. So if you ask me, you're going to have the strongest low back and combination of back together. I think you need a deadlift from the lowest position you can get to or smart, intelligently get to, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you need to do some from the higher position from the partials we already talked about. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
The partials are tremendous for low back as well. They really will, especially you pull from just below the knees.
Sure.
That's a killer for that. But the reason I like those dumbbell deadlifts is because a dumbbell deadlift essentially allows you to start with a dumbbell handle is going to sit just about on the top of your foot.
Oh, yeah.
Which is going to put you essentially in a very, very low position to start with. And if you're going to talk about building a bulletproof and useful back, you do need to have that pull from the longest range of motion, from a pull that is not really necessarily flexibility-based, but definitely gives you to the end of where you could possibly go.
Mm-hmm.
That's just something that you got to have. I think, and something I've found, I really love this, included in the book recently, is adding bands on top of my body. So I have to take a regular band, stick it around my neck, put it under my feet as if to do a banded good morning, and do my dumbbell deadlifts holding those.
That's a hell of a lot of resistance you got following that.
Resistance. One of the real problems with dumbbell deadlifts is it's hard to get dumbbells big enough.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever, or heavy enough to do that. But this allows you to add bands very quickly on top of that, and then keep the dumbbells as well. So you got that full range of motion. And with the band, it actually accommodates the resistance. So you're actually getting, you know, the higher when you're, it's easier to lock out. Well, it's actually getting harder because the band is getting.
The more you extend the band like that.
The big thing in that is you got to have some kind of deadlift, but here's what you need to find. You need to find the one, and this is with any type of movement, okay? If you had told me how we're going to build size in the whole body, well, you got to do squats, you got to do presses, you got to do pulls. But you don't got to do the same squat or the same press or the same pull that everybody else does. What you got to do is one that actually fits your body and doesn't cause you problems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Ken Lesser talked about this. He said he could do stiff leg deadlifts all day, never have a problem. But if he did really heavy conventional style deadlifts like you would do in a powerlifting meet, he would be so sore injury-wise, that not necessarily injured, but he would have soreness that felt like injury for days and days and days.
Mm-hmm.
So for him, the right deadlift is that stiff leg deadlift because it lets him work that strength without the problems of that sometimes a heavy lift can create.
Mm-hmm.
So there's my thing with that is find the one that feels the best to you, that fits right. I like those dumbbells because at the top, okay, it's a very full range of motion, but at the top, the weights come out to your side.
Mm-hmm.
Doing that, for me, it takes the stress off of the low back that you feel at lockout with a bar sitting in front of your legs.
Right? Absolutely.
For me, that makes me, you know, it's for me, it's the same type of strength you're building, but the next day, I don't feel jacked up.
Right.
So there's a thing with building a back that's super strong as well as building a back that's bulletproof.
Exactly.
I'll tell you,
no, it's I don't think people really understand what the back does. You know what I mean? It's just like there's so many things going on with you, and you hit it. That's what it was. How many exercises, why do you have to do overhead the same way everybody does? Why do you have to deadlift the same way everybody does? Why do you have to squat the same way everybody does? How do you know how much more you could add on to what you're doing if you don't go out and try new things? Why can't you do a one-arm clean and press with a dumbbell?
Yeah.
You know, maybe that works better. Or how about, like you said, using dumbbells for your deadlift, all right? Or we use farmer walk implements, anything like that. Same way for biceps. I know we're not talking biceps, but – you know, that's another hinge pin with everything. And those smaller muscles, as they say, are going for the ride with the larger ones. But you still need to work everything. And you might have to work everything in different ways. This is why I think a lot of people don't progress. And, you know, that's why you see a lot of people quit and not stay with it. Or they do the same thing. Did you ever meet people? You had to. I know people, okay, and they're not weak at all. Mm-hmm. They do the same thing. Day in, day out, year after year, and I'll ask them, what are you doing weight-wise? And they'll tell you, it's the same weight they were using 3 years ago, you know?
Yeah.
So don't you want to – I want to be proactive, and I want to be productive with what I do. And I'm not saying, you know, you don't have – you know, not to progress or, you know, just play it safe. But if we're out there slinging all that iron around, my idea is let's get bigger, let's get stronger, and you know – let's lift more. I mean, that's the whole reason why I love this stuff.
Well, and there has to be – you hit on an important point there. There needs to be a balance of things for both progress as well as functionality. So here's what I mean, okay? I have about four different deadlifts or low back moves, four different upper back moves. I have about four different squats, four different presses that I tend to cycle through, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
in my conditioning days and in my other days, I have hundreds of movements that I cycle through. Because they're not something I need to get real neurologically efficient at. They're something that I get a great move and conditioning and breathing and heart rate and pump from, but they're simple exercises I can do. In other words, I might do 50 or 100 different types of push-ups over the course of a year,
mm-hmm.
okay? But I have one or two big ones I cycle back to on a regular basis that I'm progressing in, that I'm keeping track of. In other words, it wasn't just something I knocked off 25 reps as part of a circuit in I'm doing fat loss or whatever. This right. is something I'm loading, I'm adding reps, or I'm adding weight, I'm progressing, I'm keeping a very strict idea of how I want to progress on that particular thing. And I think you need a couple of big go-to movements, but it don't always have to be the one movement.
Right.
Okay? Now, if you're competing, that's different. But even those guys, okay, look at – and I'll give you two examples that flesh this out is Ed Cohen and Louis Simmons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Louis Simmons has huge variety in their training. They're constantly experimenting, doing different stuff. But they are also constantly doing the same type of squat, the same type of deadlift, and the same type of bench press.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's the same thing. You got to do enough of that one thing to get really good at it and actually progress. And then you got to mix a few other big dog, big bang for their buck things in
mm-hmm.
to keep things rolling in progression. But now that doesn't mean I'm advocating for the P90X muscle confusion crap.
Okay?
I'm not. Your muscles need to be – I think my buddy Dave Whitley said this. We're not going for muscle confusion. We're going for muscle education.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay.
That's a great – you know. Now let's look at Ed Cohen as the opposite perspective. If you look at them and the linear periodization training style that those guys come from, they squat pretty much the same way, deadlift the same way, pretty much bench press the same way all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have very, very little variation comparatively, but they do have a few other movements. They rotate in, they cycle in and off for variation. There is that little bit enough to keep it going. Their variety is, you know, maybe 5 to 10% total of
mm-hmm.
what the guys from the West Side or conjugate style system do, but it is there. They do move a movement around here and there. They do keep things fresh. They change things. And at the same time, they do enough of the same thing over and over again to get very good at it. You got to have that. You got to have both. And I actually think you got to have that for health of the muscle and joints as well as functionality, okay? Because if you do one movement and nothing but that one movement all the time, period, you get real good at that one movement.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have the neurological efficiency that you could have to actually be functionally usable at other types of stuff. Hence the reason you get a guy who can do monster conventional deadlifts who maybe isn't quite conditioned or doesn't do as good as he could with, say, lifting a stone.
Right.
Because his pattern is so different. But if you mix those patterns back and forth, where you get a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a big amount of one to stay really neurologically efficient, but enough of others to be exposed to it, you get less likely to be injured when you get in crazy positions, when you get into tough, you know, real life.
Mm-hmm.
You get a total greater type of strength, and that movement of different types of stress, in my opinion, creates less total overuse injury. Okay.
I agree totally. And we had Bert Underwood on here one time, Bud, and he's a power lifter, and you know, I was surprised because I mean, they stick with the big three pretty much, but he was saying, now they've kind of mixed in strongman stuff to what they're doing.
Yeah.
And the main thing they do right now, he does farmer's walk, but the thing they're really jacked on is his tire flipping. And I can remember reading one of your early books where I think you named, I want to say, I could be wrong, it's been a long time since I've opened it back up, but I almost want to say you said that tire flipping might have been one of the top, at the time you said this, I don't know if you still agree with that, it was like one of the best endurance, strength endurance things you could do. Would you still fly with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
You will. You can, and here's the thing, like it can be, you can, tire is so versatile, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you learn how to do it, all right, and that's a big thing because I see a lot of people doing it badly, doing it,
mm-hmm.
okay, by doing one of two things. They're overemphasizing the arms.
Yep.
Or they're trying to totally squat the movement, and it's really a combination squat, deadlift, push movement. It's not, when you're doing it right, you're driving into it, pushing forward. The arms are the last thing involved,
mm-hmm.
not the first thing. Most people are trying to curl the freaking tire up, and that's not going to work. And that's how you get hurt, okay?
That's bicep tear, you know that.
Now, you can end up, you can do very heavy, or you can do super light. I mean, one of my go-to, you know, cycles in regularly conditioning movements is conditioning with a tire.
Yeah.
I got a 500-pound tire, which is the one I keep
mm-hmm.
here. And I've actually had tires up to 700-800 pounds and more. Just
right.
You know what actually happened? This is crazy. Somebody stole them, which is
– Are you kidding? Somebody stole your tires?
Twice. Somebody stole a couple of 700- and 800-pound tires and some smaller tires that we were using to train other people.
Dude, they had to have a lift to take those, man.
They had to have a lift.
They had to have one of those, yep.
And this, you know what's stupid about it is there's absolutely nothing you can do with those tires.
No, I know. Because I've got many of them. Here's the deal. They'll deliver them. They're great people. But once you get them, you own them. You don't bring them back. That's it, you know?
Well, and, okay, people who give you those tires, they give them to you for free because they're used. They cannot be put back on a machine.
No,
and
that's it.
The only thing that can be done with them is they have to be recycled. Well, guess what? It ain't like aluminum cans. They don't pay you to bring rubber in to recycle. They charge you. The reason those people give them to you is because it costs them money to recycle them, and it's saving them money for them to say, hey, I'd like to have that tire. They're like, take it.
Yeah.
Have a great
I hope those dummies where we're thinking they're going to make some money on your tire.
Man, that's the dumbest thing I've ever had. Twice had probably four or five tires each time.
Oh,
stolen
man.
By people. I'm like, you got to be an absolute moron.
Absolutely, for sure.
The tire flip is a great one because it does evenly function throughout the whole bog. There's a lot of the back involved, which is great.
Yeah.
And here's the great thing about tire flip. There's no eccentric movement. Okay.
Nope.
It's all concentric. So you really, once you get past doing it, other than the fully, you know, that used feeling you get from lifting, you don't really get sore in the same way you would with like a conventional deadlift.
Correct.
And the tire, I like you can't, man, you can smoke yourself into the ground. Develop huge, huge endurance with a tire. I did a workout recently that just about put me in the ground with a tire just to see if I could do it and see if I could finish it kind of quickly. And then also I got kind of a long-term goal that I go back and forth to with a tire. I took a 500-pound tire, and I did 21, 15, and 9, okay?
Yep.
I did 21 handstand push-ups, 21 tire flips, 15 handstand push-ups, 15 tire flips, 9 handstand push-ups, 9 tire flips.
Yeah,
and it was brutal.
How did you have to lay down for a little while?
Well, at the end, I had to take a little nap. I had to take a
Then you got to get up and you got to eat like half a cow to get going again, man.
Absolutely, man. And you can flip tires for speed, for high reps.
Yeah.
You can mix them in things or just straight flip them. Like one of the last couple works I did last summer, is I just took the tire and I saw how many times I could flip it in half an hour.
Oh, cool, man.
It's brutal. I got a couple of hundred reps, man, and I thought I got about 200 reps, and I was like, that's about all that I'm looking for.
How'd you feel? I mean, I know we'll keep going with the back, but when you did something for that length of duration, obviously you're in good shape too, but how long did it take when you really felt like you were back where you could – and we're not talking about going out and doing, like, a subpar workout.
Yeah, you're talking about fully recovered to be back to, like, 100%.
Yeah, how long did you really feel you needed the recovery?
A couple days.
That's good, man.
And I'll tell you why. Also, you got to remember that per capita, that tire is not very heavy.
Exactly, I know.
But it don't necessarily have to be to give you a great workout.
Right.
It don't necessarily, I mean, it don't absolutely don't have to be to give you, like, there's one of the things I like about that. For me, that tire sits in a medium range. It's heavy enough to really get some significant muscle stimulation. It's not so heavy that it rips me apart like a truly maximum, you know, squat or deadlift that would be.
And you know something too. It's I like doing stuff like that. There's something about it. Really, you know, you're talking like neuro. If your brain's not connected to your body doing that, it's never going to be connected to anything. You know, because it is. It's not a fight for your life, but boy, it's putting a solid demand on you and your body, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one part of the whole thing, man. You really can't. I mean, it's a huge demand. But, you know, if you don't put huge demand on the body, you're not going to get huge gains.
No. And this is a great thing about all this stuff that we do. It's like I've said this to you before on shows. The people that are sitting in these gyms that, you know, you'd walk in, you seem like they'd be sitting on the end of a bench. They'd have a towel over one shoulder, and they'd have their sports drink, and they looked like they just lost their best friend, man. You know, like that? And it's like, why don't you come over to Bud's house? He probably wouldn't want – he'd probably think anyways, and you go learn how to lift, man.
Yeah.
I mean, just think of the vigor and the the expectations you'd have in your life that you never even thought about.
Absolutely. That's a big thing. Yeah, and I think that's a big thing with that whole – one of the greatest benefits of lifting, period, like that, is that it's that expectation and that vitality that you build. It's because, like, when I learned to translate my life into lifting like that, what I learned to do is learn to expect that kind of gains in everything. I learned to expect that kind of I'm going to conquer it mindset in everything. And then I also learned how to actually feel like I'm freaking alive.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And that's
absolutely.
That's such a huge thing. That's the thing people don't miss. I had put a little thing out about this, you know, earlier in the week, just a little motivational stuff.
Yep.
I said, people, you know, you think heavy training is crazy. What you don't understand is that the body is the hammer to develop the mind and the soul to get that fire of life that most people don't have.
I agree with you. You made that comment today about – I can't remember. It was about Heather with finding a good woman or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I sent you a thing. I said, where do you find them like that? And it's like – you know what it is too with everything, bud? It's like when you become a really good lifter, you know, however you see it and others see you that you respect, you know, you just hit it. It's the mind, the soul, and all that. Your outside perspective changes on everything. I don't know if people realize this. Things that maybe with people, women, whatever, impressed you before, you don't really give a damn about it anymore. Mm-hmm. You're kind of looking – I'm not saying you want your alter ego, but you want something, I guess I'd say, that maybe delivers you a little balance and her too.
Mm-hmm.
But you are – a lot alike in a lot of ways. And that even goes for kind of like your beliefs on training with her and you too. I think that's more essential if you want to have something go well than whatever you're into before. And I think that's all a reflection of what you've done physically. You know,
I think you begin to explore yourself. And,
yeah.
And once you start to know yourself, you start to look for similar qualities in other people. You also start to look for depth of quality in people versus, when you strain at things, you learn the reality of what's important. You touch on the tough part of life. And, you know, things like, shallow things just don't mean as much.
Exactly.
And I think that's what you start to look for in people and in a partner or, you know, whatever. You start to look for that in definitely, I think. At least I hope that's what it is. We talk about this, and I think it's because we're thinking about strength in a philosophical way versus a lot of people don't.
Yep.
You know, a lot of people never get there. They just
– no, they don't. You're right. You're right.
And that's fine. I think it's one of those things where you're a little bit subconsciously you're developing it anyway. But once you get conscious of it, that's when you really start to get that development, when you really start to see that, man, I'm not only am I learning my physical bounds and learning where I'm at and building these incredible things, but now I'm beginning to touch on and learn my mental abilities as well, because I understand that every time I really stress them, I'm building them and I'm learning, you know, you really begin to explore yourself in a much deeper way.
Yeah. I mean, those are going to be the keys to what's going to bring you, you know, your success in the gym. I say that word gym in a light fashion or obviously in your personal life. And I think this stuff more than anything, you know, I could talk this stuff with you all night. I mean, I've done this with people. We would talk for hours about this stuff, and it's like everybody's coming up with something this, something that, and it's real interesting to kind of like dissect it a little bit, and you didn't figure it out, all right? We know that, but you know something? You had a good time talking about something that means a lot to you, and others around respect you and think of it the same way. I don't know anything out there that delivers the way this stuff does.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we've gotten off the back a little bit, but you and I, like everybody that does these shows, we always end up getting to the mental physical thing. I like it, man. I mean, we can go right back, but I'm just saying, I don't think there's anything out there that really affords you, I'll say, like some type of a mind expansion. And I don't mean by drugs either. I'm talking, you get in this stuff like really deep. Scratch that iron, man, you know, really total it, and there's no way things aren't going to change for you mentally, and I believe in a great, great, better way.
Well, because you don't get to the top end of this without mental involvement.
Exactly.
You cannot do this mindlessly and get to the top end, and nobody does. Nobody who is great at lifting doesn't have, number one, a consuming passion for it, and number two, a real thought process and a mental ability behind it. You just don't get there. That doesn't
mean you know, when you're young too, bud, you don't really even think of this at first. I mean, if you're lucky enough to stay into it for your whole life, then obviously at some point it's going to go cling right in your head, and you're going to be like, whoa, you know, you're going to figure it out. And I mean, we're never going to figure it out totally, but I would say the major portion of any of my success to this. And I mean that not only in the gym, I mean outside personally.
Right.
The lessons this stuff teaches you, I don't think you could put even a money value on it.
Right. Oh, I don't think you can. The what it does for your life is a whole other situation. You can't buy that.
No, you can't. Yeah. All right. So what do we want to hit any more stuff?
I got two more things I think are important on the back. So,
yeah, shoot.
All right. To review for everybody, you want to build a big back, okay? You got to do something that directly targets the low back and hips. That's going to be some kind of a deadlift or that kind of pull. Okay. Mm-hmm. You got to do something that directly targets the lats and upper back. Okay. Which is going to be some kind of a row. Yep. And that's going to cover your rhomboids and stuff a lot as well. And I think you're going to need some kind of a trap type movement, a shrug or that kind of thing, or a high pull or explosive pull, that way. Something I forgot to mention there that I really love is the one arm snatch, the heavy one arm snatch.
Yep.
Because I do think that targets the whole back, low too high, all the everything involved there. Huge trap involvement in that pull, huge back and hip involvement, explosive, so it's an athletic thing as well. I actually teach people, though, you got to remember that the old-time guys were doing one-arm snatches. You see these super psychotically heavy one-arm snatches that they were doing, okay?
Yep.
They were doing those snatches like a modern Olympic lifter does his snatches, okay? They're dropping full into them, and most people just aren't ready for that. I actually think you get as much development athletically as well as muscularly by just doing a muscle snatch, by doing a one-arm muscle snatch. It's so much simpler, and you get all the same power whether you move the same weight or not. Mm-hmm. Two things I think – now, this is something I've been experimenting with recently. This has blown my lats up, which is a difficult thing to do because I'm already an advanced lifter, okay?
Absolutely.
Started doing isometric rows.
Mm-hmm.
And doing what I call cluster sets or pulling them together. So I would do like either with a dumbbell for one arm rows or with a machine. I would pull, hold for 5 seconds, drop it. Pull, hold for 5 seconds, drop it. So if I'm doing it, I'll do right hand five, left hand five, right hand five, left hand five, and try to go for like 5 minutes or 10 minutes, going back and forth.
Oof.
You know, just short holds, but fairly heavy, or working up and down in a rack or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, add weight, just descend weight on my supported row machine.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, my lats were about to split my shirt. I mean, it's just
that's awesome.
And it's a super simple thing to do, but it's way harder than it looks.
Well, Bud, for the people that don't have something like that or they don't want to use dumbbells, would you still suggest going from rod to rod in a power rack and holding them like that?
You know, you can do it that way. That's fine. I just pulled with a dumbbell. I just literally pull it up to the waist. And hold.
Yep, and then hold.
I don't bother with, you know, you can do it either way.
Okay.
Pull into a pin or pull against a chain or something. But these are just for sake of simplicity. I would start there. Just pull it to the top end of the motion and hold there for a few seconds. Let it down. And then do it.
Now, are you adding every time or using one size of a dumbbell to do that?
I'm experimenting both ways. So I'll just take one dumbbell and stay at the same weight and just go back and forth. Go right hand, left hand, and just go back and forth that way. Or what I did last time is I set up four dumbbells and heavier. So I did. I set up a 50, a 100, a 150, and a 200, and I just set them in line, and I would do one rep each way. So I do one rep hold, go to the next one, go to the next one, go to the next one, go to the, up to the biggest one, and then start, and then go right back down. Now, sometimes I'll do it by going, like, up reverse. So I'll go 50, 100, 150, 200, and then I'll go back to 150, back to 100, back to 50.
Yep.
Or sometimes I'll just start over completely and I'll go 50, 100, 150, 200, then go right back to 50, then go 100 to 150, 200. See what I'm saying? So you're just going back and forth. And with that, you can move almost nonstop because by the time you get to the heaviest one, you go right back to a light one, which you can hold a little longer, control, and you just go back, forth all the time. I did that for about 10 minutes nonstop a week or two ago. And, dude, I mean, talk about a lat situation. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll tell you the next thing I think we haven't talked about, but especially in bulletproofing the back, is mobility. in the back, because it's great to be a big heavy lifter, okay? But if you can't bend a little bit, like if you can't drop down, tie your shoes pretty good, or maybe somersault or a forward backward roll, or if you can't pull your knees up to your chest or stretch down and you know, touch your below your knee, stretching sideways, or if you can't maybe do a up or down, up and down dog from yoga or a bridge from a wrestling, your mobility is not there.
Right.
And that's a big one. I think that's something we overmiss, but also I think we oversimplify. In talking about back mobility, I think most people think about just being able to do like one thing or two things. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they think about if I can touch my toes, my back is mobile enough. Or if I can, right, you know, do an up dog position where my pelvis is on the floor and my hands are up and I'm looking up at the ceiling, well, then my back is enough. Well, maybe not. Because if your lateral flexibility and mobility with the back isn't good, if your flexibility in an uneven stance, if your ability to move the back in different ways isn't good, you probably just aren't there. For long-term health and the ability to get into awkward positions and not get hurt, the ability to, that's something you really got to work on, that kind of thing. I think that starts with hip mobility and spinal mobility is very connected.
Yep.
And doing motions that create and that hip, that mobility, as well as stability while you're doing it, is a big thing.
I like to do a lot of Hindu push-ups.
Yep.
Obviously, bridging. You know what I like to do too, and I find it. Obviously, I've seen you do it before. I like getting into a wall chair.
Right.
Just if I'm out in the garage itself, then I'll put weight on top of my thighs.
Mm-hmm.
I like sitting like that too for quite a while. It's kind of more of a mental exercise, but I just like the idea of that. And I also use the YesSys machine a lot of times just to stretch the spine out. You know,
right,
have some flexibility in it. I don't do somersaults. I haven't tried those at all. I'm sure I could, but you know, I understand totally where you're going with it. I mean,
here's the thing about what you mentioned. Almost all of that stuff is an exercise, but it is also a mobility movement.
Yes.
Okay? So there's the point is when you're doing Hindu push-ups, not only are you actually getting the push-up movement, you're also getting the flexibility in the back.
Correct.
That, you know, again, it's a great multi-payoff movement, which is, you know, as much as possible you should do. You should be doing things that have multiple payoffs in other – you know what I'm saying? In other ways.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely, because you are getting. Look at anything like that. You're getting a muscular benefit.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you always got to hear everybody saying the core. I won't even say that word. It's like you're getting gut abdominal big time there. And you know, just think about when you're getting in that movement as you're coming up, going down. You're almost scraping the floor and coming back up, and then you're looking back towards yourself again. I mean, geez, you're going to have a lot of spine flexibility there. And it's the same way with the bridge. I mean, obviously, you got to be very careful if you've never done it before. But I'll tell you, if you give it a shot, you're going to really love doing it. I love being able – I've got short baseboards here upstairs. I love putting my nose right against the bottom of that thing. You know, you're right there. And it feels good. I mean, your neck, everything, you know. But it's like anything. You got to be very careful with stuff like that. You know, especially with the neck. As my chiropractor, may he rest in peace, say, break the neck, you no longer have any life force. So
right.
That kind of always rings in my ears when I do stuff like that.
Well, and that's another thing we talked about. We haven't gotten to, but okay, why would you want to do all this stuff for the back? Because the back and the hip complex are extremely vital to life force.
Mm-hmm.
They are.
Exactly.
You know, when the Bible and other all kind of old books referred to gird the loins, the strength of the loin. That's all back and hip complex. That's core before anybody could spell core. and that, you know, is how they judged a man's strength and vitality.
Yes.
And all of that works together. The better blood flow you have there, guess what? The better blood flow you have in those intimate moments.
Absolutely. So you don't have to order Cialis or Viagra off the TV, man.
Yeah, all of them.
Holy God. That's all you see. I mean, I'm not a big TV lover, but I'll tell you, if I want to watch a sporting event, if there's something I want to see, I mean, you're just bombarded with that stuff. I'm like, Is everybody that bad now they can't get it up anymore or what?
You know, I think most people are just their health is so terrible.
Yeah.
Now, I had this discussion with Peter Ragnar, and we talked about that, and it, you know,
yep.
I mean, really, really, those things are signs that your circulation system just isn't working as good
absolutely.
As it needs to, and you got, you know, and that's something that we all need to be working on, and that something we also didn't talk about there, but another reason I talked about multi, you know, use movements, okay,
mm-hmm.
swings and snatches, I love doing those for super high reps. Why? Because those super high reps, even with light weight, pump the back up and use it incredibly powerfully along with the hips and create that heart and blood flow all together.
Well, yeah, and think about this. When you're doing a swing, what are you doing? You're thrusting.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you know, we're not going to get off the G-rated show here, but
oh, absolutely.
If people can't put together what a thrusting motion is, then you need to go talk to somebody.
Well, and here's the thing. It's an important movement to work.
It is.
An important movement to work regardless of the, you know, the adult connotations to it. It's an important
yep.
for hip and back usefulness as well as blood flow.
Well, that might be, you know, and I was going to talk to you before about kettlebells. You know, obviously you're a big proponent of it, and we see what you've been doing lately with your son. Mm-hmm. You know, that might be something we want to get into and do a big show on that.
Sure.
I mean, that'd be really great. Is there anything else you want to add, bud?
Well, you know, I mean, the back is a complex subject, man. We could talk about it for days, but
I know we could. Well, you know something, and there's no one saying we can't do a part two to this show either.
You know, I think we're good. I think we've given a roadmap here of the important
okay.
things you need to do.
Okay.
And
well,
we can pick it up again.
Okay. All right. Well, why don't you give everybody your information, and I'll give mine, and then I'll speak to you a little bit off air, and that's it.
All right, brother. So if you guys want to find us, remember to hit me up at strongerman.com. That's our website, okay? And that's got everything there, all the books, videos, and stuff. I got look for the brand new book coming out, Maximum Functional Mass. It's already in pre-sale right now, which is cheaper, but it'll be available in the next couple of days. We'll actually be able to read it. And then also you can hit me up, you know, on Twitter or Facebook. Facebook's a really great way to get a hold of me. Also, you know, I'm trying to, you know, come into the 21st century. Instead of sending people smoke signals, I'm doing stuff like, you know, Instagram and and Pinterest. So you can also look me up on there and just look up my name and, you know, Bud Jeffries, and you can hook me up right there, and you guys won't be disappointed. I think people are going to love this new stuff, man, because they're really going to be able to add some muscle that they won't believe.
Well, that's the thing. And you just, you know, we went over some big stuff tonight. I mean, I'm sure your book is chock full like that. And, you know, look, if you're spending the money, you want to get the best bang for your buck. And there's too many things that you buy these days that are, how would I put it? Maybe a lot of gloss and very lean in the beef, to say.
Right.
And look, you and I both know as young kids, you know, you're starving for material. And like I had written yesterday, you know, The pros workouts just didn't work for the kid when I'm doing, like, you know, five sets of 15 for my biceps, and I can't understand why they won't do anything and why I can't, like, straighten my arms out, you know. And this is a 10-year-old kid, right? So that's why I say, you know, we know Bud's got good stuff, and, you know, you're gonna have success with it. You got anything else there, boss?
You know, well, you mentioned that, you know, all show, and I'm the opposite.
Right.
I'll give you all beef, no slick.
Yeah. What you've got the main word, functional.
Yeah.
That's the thing, and that's it. All right, then I'll give all my information. This is Motivation and Muscle. This is a podcast show that connects your brain to your brawn. We are sponsored by Fiorello Barbell Company here in upstate New York, Albany to be precise. www.fiorellobarbellco.com. We're Motivation and Muscle. motivationandmuscle.com. We're on Facebook, Fiorello Barbell, Twitter, Fiorello Eric. Motivation and Muscle now has a page on Facebook. That's what it's called. You can get a hold of me at Fiorello Barbell at nicap.rr.com. And check out the two new websites. Eric Relou, he's the guy that does all the work for me. FBC's brand new. Motivation Muscle's been up for about 3 weeks, and we're getting ready to start our next project, which will be out at the end of the year. And I don't know. I just want to thank everybody for their support. Bud, everybody else that's helped me out here, participate in the show. The feedback is extraordinary we're getting, and, you know, they've called you out and many other people associated with these shows. And, you know, I want to thank you and all the people that have helped me out and participated, because I do feel we've had quite a run already for our 19th week. I'm looking really forward to 2015. I think we're going to I predict we'll have 100,000 downloads before the half of the year is done. So, you know, it helps everybody associated with the show, and I couldn't be happier. So thanks, Bud. I appreciate
that. Sure, man. Thank you.
So before I leave, I'm going to say this again. I love these words. We're the stewards of strength. We are the gatekeepers. So remember, get out there and train. You know, as Bud would say, functional strength. You know, this is where it all is. This is what you need to do. You know, grow your mind. You know, join us in physical culture. So for Bud Jeffries, this is Eric Fiorello. I want to thank you for listening to us tonight. We'll see you in a couple weeks again. Thanks and have a great.
Thanks so much for listening to Motivation and Muscle, the podcast that connected your brain to your brawn. We'll see you next time.